Kia ora e te whana. My name is Sasha and welcome to Two Tipsy Plants Podcast.
My name is Sasha too.
And my name is Sasha One. This is the podcast where we speak plants and drink booze.
How do you speak plants? Is that a language?
I speak to plants. I
to
talk
tipsy
about
plants.
Yes, and today we're extra tipsy because we have been already recording one podcast prior.
Yeah, we are. That's the second episode that we are recording today. So yeah,
we decided to just push through.
What's today's episode about, Sasha?
Today's episode will be about the plants that defy the norms.
Yes, some plants that are quite alien if you think about it. Like they are just not typical plants and they just don't do typical plant thing.
But... Or just it's surprising how they are alive.
Actually, yes, I've got a couple of them that are... Are you alive or not?
Desert lily, desert rose.
Something desert, but I don't know if it's a rose. Anyway.
Are we going to have plants that are going to be crossing over again? Probably will.
Possibly. No, it's not called a desert rose. Anyway, before we start, traditionally, Sasha, what are we having today? What is the second bottle of wine that we're having today?
What are we having today? Again? Today we're having the Bogel Vineyard Old Vine Zinfandel, 2019 Californian wine. All right.
And today we have a cork.
Cork screw open. Cork top. Cork. We have a cork in a bottle.
Do you know where corks come from?
South America.
Yeah, but do you know what plant it is? It's actually an oak. It's a cork oak. And the bark of that oak looks like that. Looks like, obviously it's processed and stuff. But you can, if you do it the right way, you can remove the bark of the tree without killing it and it will continue reproducing the cork bark.
Yeah.
But it's an oak, which I was surprised.
I have seen this discovery video.
Rosie has joined us. Sitting on a little chair next to us.
Finally, don't pay any attention to her and then she probably will not react to us.
Rosie, speak. Speak.
Speak. Speak.
She's like, no. No, she doesn't want to speak to us. Oosh. Mm-hmm. Spicy.
Do you know what is
the having? That's so spicy.
I don't think it's spicy. I think it's very berry. It smells very like... Black currants.
It smells very pepper.
I can see where you're getting it from, but also it's not like the first thing that hits your face.
Honestly, like I can smell definitely like the wood. You know what it smells like? It actually smells like a barrel. I mean, duh, but like I can just smell a barrel and it smells like, it gives me this vibe, right? You walk into like a cellar with an empty barrel in it. But there is like an evening sunlight just somehow hits that barrel. I don't know.
Are you a poet or something?
No, it's just what it says is it's a very warm and comfortable smell. You know what I mean? Like it makes you feel very comfy.
Nice and warm, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, tell us more
so,
about
it. It is a very fruit forward, yet bold and red.
Absolutely bold, yes.
And it's loved for its jammy fruit and smoky and exotic spice
smoky,
notes.
Yes, yes. See, spices.
Spices. It is ideal with Turkish, Moroccan, or Arabic cuisine, which brings out the grape cinnamon-like spices. And it's very like blackberry, strawberry, peach preserves, cinnamon, and sweet tobacco flavors on it.
Definitely sweet tobacco is definitely cinnamon. Peach, no. It's more like sort of prunes to me.
Prune?
It smells like I actually have
the
essential
aftertaste.
Oil for the diffuser that smells like it as well.
The aftertaste. Probably will be the peach preserves.
Do you know what it smells like? Cedarwood. Like, actually smells like cedarwood. I don't know. It wouldn't be my go-to wine, but it's actually, like, I like the flavor, the smell profile on it. It's very spicy compared to the Pinot Noir that we had earlier that you can hear about in the previous episode. It's completely different. Not in a bad way, in a good way. Like, it's just
and the Malbec and the Shiraz that we had before Pinot Noir.
Don't expose. Son of a bitch. So as Sasha mentioned, today we will be talking about plants that don't do a typical plant thing. They are not
They don't plant. They just don't plant.
They're just not, they're not your typical green-leafed plants. They just do their own thing. I think I'll start because I have a few more plants than you have on your list.
Do it.
Sasha, do you know what a naked lady lily is?
Ooh, are we allowed to talk about that? Is it PG-18?
Not quite. So the botanical name for it is Amaryllis belladonna. And just like in the previous episode, I will continue my adventure into the Latin names of the plants. Do you know what belladonna means?
I know what amaryllis is, which is all types of lilies. Amaryllis. I know what belladonna is, which is a shrub, which is poisonous, which has poisonous berries.
So belladonna, the Latin belladonna, means beautiful lady. I have actually seen this lily myself in the shop where both of us used to work before. It is sold in there as well, belladonna lily. So the reason it is called naked lady plant, naked lady lily, is they send up the greenery, right, the leaves in the late autumn, and eventually they died back. You know, the plant looks like nothing. But then in late summer, it will send out the leaves, right? The lily leaves without flower. And then it will die back. And then when late summer hit, the plant sprouts a stem, just a stem, with a lily flower on it. So the reason it's called naked lady is because it literally is a stem.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them in New Zealand.
Yeah. You can grow them in New Zealand. Literally a stem from the ground with just the lily flower on top of it. Do you know what they look like? The alien plants from The Sims? Do you know that if you build a rocket, like if you actually master the rocket, the science skill, you can build a rocket and you can fly onto the alien planet? Did you know that?
No.
So you can fly onto alien planet and there are plants that kind of look like this, naked lily plants?
I don't think I have ever been that dedicated into Sims game itself, like beyond building the house like 3 times and then closing the app.
I've done both. Kept building the houses and also actually did the gameplay as well. So yeah, the reason that is plant defies your typical plant norms is obviously because it sends the leaves first, so it does the photosynthesis before it actually sends the flower out, which is quite interesting. But yeah, if you are interested, just we'll post some pictures. Amaryllis belladonna, the naked lady lily plant. Have a look at that and see for yourself. Sasha, what have you got on your list?
Talking about the amaryllis that you have mentioned and the way it grows, I wanted to talk about the Amorphophallus.
Okay, what is that?
Amorphophallus, titanium, is a corpse plant.
Okay.
It is similar way it grows in two distinct stages. First, it grows the leaves, and then it will grow the flower. So first, it will grow the leaves, well, a stem with
kind of looks
three
like
leaves.
A potato stem,
it looks
it?
Like a potato stem, yeah. But also the branches that it grows, it's not actually branches, it's modified leaves.
Isn't it so one single leaf, Toby?
It's just one single leaf, but it's just very...
It's quite big as well, like it kind of looks like...
It looks like a tree, but it's just one... branch
massive
with
leaf, yeah, isn't it?
One branch with one big massive leaf, and then when it has enough sugars, I guess, within the bulb, it dies back, and then the giant flower grows back.
Ah, okay. I knew that it has a leaf and a flower after, but I did not think that the leaf actually dies down and then just the flower appears. Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a giant flowering plant that is native to the rainforest of Sumatra in Indonesia. It is famous for its enormous inflorescence, which is one of the largest and most distinct flowers in the plant kingdom. The titanium arum holds the record for largest unbranched inflorescence in the world. It can reach heights up to 3 meters and a diameter of 1 meter.
Wow.
Over 1 meter, actually. The flower consists of a tall central spadix surrounded by a large, frilly, leaf-like structure called spathy. Spathy. The spathy is typically green on the outside and reddish purple on the inside, which gives it a visually striking appearance. It is like the spathy actually looks like flower petals, and the spadix looks like a very big corn.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. It looks
middle.
Like a corn cob, doesn't it? Yeah.
Also, the fun fact that is not mentioned on most of the online things is that the spadix itself is very hot.
Yep.
It
like
attracts...
actually in temperature.
Yeah.
Yep. I have a plan to follow that up, which has very similar attributes to it. Yeah.
So yeah, it produces heat to attract the insects, I think, or bats. I can't remember what it tries to attract.
I'm not sure, but I will elaborate with my plant. Mm. Yeah.
It also produces unusual odor. One of the most notable characteristics of a titanium arum is actually the pungent odor. And when the plant blooms,
It emits the foul smell, resembling the rotting flesh and decaying carcass. It is quite a typical thing within the parasitic plants, to be honest. Like, if you think
it's not a parasitic plant, though. It's a carnivorous plant.
No, not the corpse.
Oh, are you not talking about...
It's a corpse plant.
Yeah.
It's not a carnivorous plant.
But it's not a parasitic plant. It eats flies. So it's a carnivorous...
Corpse plant is not eating flies.
Okay. So what...
Corpse plant is... That's why it has two stages of leaves, which will absorb the sunlight, do the photosynthesis thing, gain all the things that it needs as a plant, store it in a bulb, and then it will become a plant, flower.
Actually, yeah, that's right. It uses flies to pollinate.
Yes, you're confusing it with a pitcher plant or Drosera but then Venus Fletcher.
At the same time, it's not a parasitic plant.
Yeah, now I'm confusing it. Do you know from the top of your head what Rafflesia is? Imagine the humongous flower that looks like shit ton of beefsteaks.
Oh, is it the one that has like a massive hole in the
middle? A massive hole in the middle.
The red one, yeah.
Yeah, and smells like rotten flesh.
But it actually eats flies, doesn't it?
No, it's also pollinated by flies, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I got a little bit carried away and thought that it's parasitic.
No, yeah.
But yeah.
Have you actually went to the botanical gardens to smell it?
I tried to go to Botanic Gardens to smell
it. It's quite rare that it flowers, isn't it?
Well, it does take it a while to accumulate enough energy for the flower to emerge. I think in the Botanic Garden it takes around 4 years. And last time it was happening,
there was an enormous queue to actually see it.
The queue was too big.
Yeah.
And by the time we would actually reach the flower, it would probably be closed.
Cool. I have a plant from the same family to follow up on your plant, actually.
Quick note. Titanium aurum is also considered as a vulnerable species due to the habitat loss caused by the deforestation, every other plant.
But also, because you've mentioned that it is actually endemic to Indonesia, and Indonesia goes through a lot of deforestation just to provide land for the
palm oil.
Palm oil, yeah. Do you remember story time?
Oh my gosh.
Back in Singapore, when we used to live in Singapore, every time there is a massive forest fire, be it human initiated or actually a natural fire in Indonesia.
Most of the times it's going to be initiated by humans but covered by the accidental.
Well, yeah, it's obviously nobody officially knows that it's been done by the humans. I remember because there is a PSI level, and if it's more than 50, it's considered
more than normal.
More than normal, and you're supposed to wear like a damp mask. And I remember when the levels were like close to 400, where you literally smell smog, it's called. Yeah. And I remember walking to Paulina's place, and usually I can see her place from my window, and I could not see further than literally 10 meters in front of
me. Well, let's put things into perspective. 50 was normal. 80 was considered lightly polluted. 100 was considered...
Wear a mask. Yeah.
120 to 200 was considered dangerous. We were having 400, which was considered...
It was close to 400. Malaysia was actually struck more than Singapore.
Yeah, but the thing is that if anybody have seen the movie called...
Mist?
Fog? Mist?
The mist, yeah.
That was exactly that.
Yes,
yes. The same
vibes. You could not see further than that.
I literally put my arm forward and I couldn't see the tip of my finger.
Yeah, it was
very
bad.
Dense smoke.
Smoke, yeah. Yeah. I'll follow up on your corpse plant with a plant from the same family that is called a dead horse plant.
Is it still Amorphophallus?
It is...
Amorphophallus.
Amorphophallus. It is a low-growing plant of granite crevices along the coast of Corsica, Sardinia, actually. But it is an arum lily as well. It's called a dead horse arum lily. It is from some of the Mediterranean islands as well. It is a innocuous-looking mottled green path that opens to reveal a nightmare interior.
Do you want to try it again?
Honestly, I don't know what half of that means. Anyway, the dead horse plant is very similar looking to the corpse plant, but it actually looks more disgusting. It's very hairy, the actual plant.
Oh, nice. So it looks phallic and hairy.
It looks feminine genitals and hairy.
Vagine?
Vagine, yes. Just like the corpse plants, it attracts the blowflies, which it depends on.
Wrong plant to attract the blowflies.
That's what they are called, blowflies.
I know. But there is nothing to blow there.
And it does emit the same sort of rotting flesh odor, hence it's called a dead horse plant. I don't know if it smells like dead horses or... Yeah, and apparently it's one of the most disgusting plants in the world, which I guess could be challenged by the corpse plant. It does the same thing where when the flower is getting pollinated by the beetles or flies, it actually raises the temperature up, just like the corpse plant. I think the temperature, it's quite a high temperature. Like it's like 36 or, yeah, which is almost close to our body temperature, which is impressive for a plant to do.
But also a lot of, like, for example, mosquitoes are quite attracted to us, and probably that's why they're attracted to that plant, because it's similar to the animal temperature.
Mm. But yeah, the smell does not only lure the flies in, but it also deters other large animals as predators to it. And honestly, if I was a mammal,
if I were a boy...
I am a mammal, I guess, but I would never eat that horse plant or a corpse plant just because I don't know what they smell, but by the description, they don't smell like something that you would want to eat. And hence they're saying that because we are deterred from that smell, other animals are deterred from that smell as well, I guess, except for like hyenas and stuff.
The thing is that it's pollinated by insects. Insects are quite attracted to a shit smell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was plant number
two.
yeah, I jumped my cue just because it was close enough name-wise.
You know what titanium means, by the way? Titanium?
Like, well, humongous?
Yeah. Actually, speaking of, sorry, I just wanted to say that the dead horse plant, its scientific name is Helicodicerus massivorus.
So Helicodicerus massivorus?
Yes. And massivorus means appears to eat flies, but doesn't. It appears to eat.
The plant that I would like to talk about will be the Welwitschia mirabilis. This unique plant is native to Namib Desert. It has a strange appearance. It consists of only two leaves that grow continuously throughout its lifespan and gives its distinctive almost shredded appearance.
What is the name of the plant again? Sorry?
Welwitschia mirabilis. I did not find a common name for this plant.
I have this plant for the next episode. That's the trouble. Anyway.
Next episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's got the longest leafed leaves.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what is the common name for it then?
I'm not sure actually. It is called by the first name.
Welwitschia. Yeah. Exactly. It is known for having one of the longest living leaves among all plants.
There you go. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little sneak peek. The next episode that we are recording is the overachiever plants. So the biggest, the smelliest, the
longest,
the greatest,
the longest living,
the most plants in the world. Yeah. And hence, I actually had it noted for the next episode because it's got the most long-lived leaves. But
I also,
you stole that.
A snatch.
Yep, you snatched that.
So I also have left a comment for myself when I was doing the research, just for people who don't know what it looks like, but to actually try to visualize it. So it looks like a plant from a cartoon when somebody tipped the poison into the plant, you know, when it just like flops off the floor.
Mm.
Yeah. And so it just dried, shriveled, and dropped like a bowl of soggy noodles.
What I imagine it looking like is if you took a kelp or like a seaweed out of the sea, that's kind of what it looks like. Yeah, because the leaves are no longer floating. You just take it out and they sort of flop on the ground.
Mm.
And the color is very similar as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like very gray, green, brown. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like brown greens. Yeah.
Like if your plant is struggling and needs watering, that's the color it probably takes. It is dioecious plant, which means individual plants are either male or female.
Mm. Just like ginkgo biloba that we talked about in the previous episode as well.
I think mistletoe is also male, female.
Can't remember.
Avocado is definitely.
What I remember about mistletoe, actually, I read about it while researching for this episode as well, is apparently we didn't cover that in our previous episodes because we did talk about mistletoe in the episode 5. Yeah. Apparently, mistletoe berries are actually sticky. So when birds eat it, they stick to their beak. And then when birds go to another tree and like try to get the worms or the beetles out of the tree, the seed gets stuck onto the tree because mistletoe is a parasitic plant. Yeah. So that's how it actually moves to another tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is fun.
It's like a completely different topic, but yeah.
But yeah, growth-wise, Mirabilis is known as a remarkable, it has a remarkable adaptation. It just looks like a two humongous belts growing out of the center of the plant.
The they kind of look entangled
into each other. Well, it's like really wrapped, wrinkly and everything. It doesn't look like the plant is supposed to be alive.
No. Yeah, no.
The leaves are designed to collect the moisture from the coastal fog that rolls in from the Atlantic Ocean, as well as from the occasional rain.
Mm. It's really cool because I read about it as well. It's really cool how it actually gets the moisture out of the fog. Well, it relies on the fog rather than rain, because obviously the moisture desert from the air, doesn't get rain that often. Yeah.
Actually, lifespan-wise, some of the scientists estimate the oldest one to be at around 2,000 years.
Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That plant definitely defies typical plant norms, yes.
It have seen some shit.
Yeah. That was very interesting. I am actually a bit upset that you kind of hijacked my plant for the next episode.
You'll have to do more research.
Right. The next plant that I have on my list is called a ghost plant. You don't have that on your list, do you?
No.
Okay. So the ghost plant is called Monotropa uniflora. Guess what uniflora means?
One flower.
Yes. Monotropa uniflora, also known as ghost plant, ghost pipe, or Indian pipe, is a herbaceous perennial native to Asia, North America, and South America. The reason why I've chosen that plant and why it is alien and why it is it doesn't do the typical plant thing is because the plant is white. It almost is transparent, which kind of explains the name of it. But it also means that the plant does not have chlorophyll in it, which is an essential element to photosynthesize for the plants to actually produce food, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what it is a plant, because usually, let's say mushrooms, they don't have chlorophyll in them. So there are parasitic fungi, obviously, that are relying on other plants to get the sugars from. And there are some fungi that have the symbiotic relationship with other plants, right? But this is an actual plant. It's not a fungi. However, this plant has a symbiotic relationship with fungi. Unlike most plants, it's white, as I said, and it contains no chlorophyll. It is actually parasitic. So it does have symbiotic relationship with mushrooms, but it's still considered to be parasitic. And the host plants are usually fungi, and that's how the plant gets the sugars and the energy pretty much to sustain. It looks really funny because it's got like one, it's kind of like a hood.
Repeat the name of the plant.
Monotropa uniflora. It's very small as well, but you see what I mean? It does look like a
fungus as well.
It does look like fungus, but it's not, which is interesting. Yeah, because I thought it was a fungus at first, because obviously fungi are not plants. It's a completely separate. But yeah, I found it quite interesting, fascinating, and definitely a plant that does not do a typical plant thing.
Alrighty. What should I talk about now? I'll talk about resurrection plant.
You son of a...
Is it from the next episode or from this episode?
Oh, I've got it as well.
It's fine.
I actually was so proud of this plant because I thought that you would find it. It is so cool, eh? It's amazing, actually. But yeah, you start talking about it and I'll probably add on if I have anything about it. Yeah.
Resurrection rose, also known as resurrection plant, also known as a Jericho rose. The scientific name will be Selaginella lipidophylla. It is native to the Chihuahuan desert.
Yeah.
desert. Chihuahua desert. Which spans parts of the Southwest United States and North Mexico.
So can you tell us what is so alien and not typical plant-ish about that plant?
Well, imagine yourself a potpourri.
A what? A
potpourri.
What is that?
Well, dried up plants in a bowl that you put in your toilet that smell nice.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine fern that is shriveled into itself.
Yeah, so...
That looks like a Jericho rose.
That... Well, it is... Yeah, actually, yeah, now that you said that, yes, it is called Jericho rose, yes. So I found it really fascinating when I started researching about it, how it can... Because it's a plant that grows in the desert, right?
Mm-hmm.
What it does, it pretty much goes completely dormant. It turns off 95% of its metabolic activity,
mm-hmm.
shrivels into itself, and...
And just looks like a ikebana?
Pretty much like a dried sphagnum moss as well.
Mm.
It just looks completely dead, even though it's not. All it takes is a little bit of water to actually revive it.
And it just opens up as well. It just
opens up, yeah. I think it said it takes about a couple of hours to actually open it up.
Still, it's bloody fast for a dead plant.
Yeah, and you can notice it with your naked eye.
My peace lily revives slower than that.
Yeah. What I found really cool about this plant as well is when it goes into that dry, dormant stage, if it gets picked up, so the root dries out as well, even mm-hmm. though it's still alive, but it dries out. If it gets picked up by the wind, it moves pretty much like a tumbleweed, goes somewhere else, and if it receives water, the root is like, oh yeah, I'm back alive, and it just roots itself in another place.
Easy.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
That is plant, great.
It can move, and it can survive without water for up to, did it say up to 2 years or something like that? It actually can...
I actually don't have that information.
Pretty sure, okay, don't quote me on that, but pretty sure it is at least a year without water that it can survive.
Yeah.
But yeah, the reason that plant is called resurrection plant is obviously because if you add just a little bit of water, it comes back alive and it opens up, like it actually, like, because it's all shriveled and it kind of curls into itself. It opens up and it's like, yeah, I'm resurrected. Did you know that it's actually used in like voodoo practices as well? Just for that?
Well, resurrection, kind of, yeah, voodoo-ish thing. Mm.
Yeah.
Resurrection plant has also become popular as a curiosity and ornamental plant. It is often sold in a desiccated forms, like very dried.
Mm. So I guess you can buy it and sort of resurrect it yourself.
You know your infusion teas that sometimes, like in Singapore, I've seen that. Like
what are they called? I know the ones that you mean. The flower tea, like you can actually buy the actual flower,
mm-hmm. and then you boil it and it just like opens up. Cute. Yeah, yeah. So that's what it reminds me of.
Mm. I actually would love, like, if they were to sell it as a houseplant, I would love it simply because you cannot kill it. Well, I guess it's very difficult to kill it.
As long as you remember once in 2 years to water it.
No, I found it super fascinating as well.
Okay. Do you want to do?
Yeah.
Even though you talk the most?
Well, no, I mean, I feel like we
Sorry, I need to dig at it.
I feel like we shared that one.
No, you go.
The next plant that I have on my list is the botanical name for it is Cadariocalyx maturus. Do you know what it might do?
It moves.
Yes, it does.
Is it the one from Singapore that you touched?
No, it's not the mimosa. I do have mimosa on my list as well.
Yay, because I don't.
Okay. It is called a dancing plant or a telegraph plant. So it does have the same properties as the mimosa plant as well. The motion occurs in daylight hours when the temperature is above 72 degrees Fahrenheit. What is it in Celsius?
22. I was like, 42, shit.
So in Celsius, it is 22.22222 degrees Celsius, yeah. And many sources claim that the two leaflets move on a common axis. So apparently the plant has two little leaflets before the main leaves, and they define the direction of the sun, and then the other leaves, so they move to the sun.
Just like the
sunflower. The thing is, the sunflower, you cannot see it with naked eye. Sunflower takes a long time to actually move to where the sun is. Where with this plant, you can, just like with mimosa, you can see it move pretty much you know, you can perceive its movement.
So if you do the flashlight test thingy.
What do you mean?
Like if you like put that plant in a dark room and take the flashlight and start pointing at it.
I think it has to be like a UV flashlight, probably, because it obviously
black light,
is...
so you'll see the plant and a lot of stains around it.
Yeah.
Unwanted stains.
But yeah, the reason it's called dancing plant is because, yeah, it does move to find the best position for the sun. There is also speculation that the movement actually resembles a butterfly, so that other butterflies won't lay eggs on it. So, like, because it, you can obviously perceive it with your naked eye, and butterflies think that it's another butterfly, and they just won't lay eggs on the plant. Apparently, there are not that many plants that do that movement, as in they can actually move that human eye can perceive. But it takes a lot of energy for the plant to invest into that movement. And yeah, I'll elaborate on it a little bit more when I talk about mimosa.
Mm.
Mm. But yeah, that's plants the reason why it's not a typical plant, because it freaking moves.
It has muscles, but yeah. Of its own sort.
It exercises.
They just need to develop muscles.
Do you even follow the sun, bro?
Awesome. Thank you, Sarah. That was actually quite interesting. Unlike everything else.
I feel like everything that we discuss is absolutely interesting. That's why I love this podcast.
Pando. Pando.
No idea.
Pando, or a trembling giant. Pando is located in the Fish Lake National Forest of Utah, United States.
Well, what's the scientific name?
Pando. I would say pando will be the common name for it.
Yeah.
Populus tremuloides.
Populus, that's a tree, isn't it? Okay, interesting, yeah.
Pando is not a traditional forest consisting of multiple individual trees, but rather a massive clonal colony of quaking aspen trees.
Ah, tremulous, quivering. Ah, interesting.
What appears to be a dense forest is actually a single organism connected through an extensive underground root system. All the trees in Pando are genetically identical and are essentially clones of one each other.
I've heard about it, yes.
It is essentially a mycelium, but a tree.
Yeah.
Size and age of Pando covers approximately 43 hectares and consists of, to estimate it, it's going to be around 47,000 stems or trunks.
Oh, wow. It is a forest.
The root system.
Of a single plant.
Yeah. The wow. Root system of Pando is estimated to be over 80,000 years old. Mm. 80,000 years old.
I don't quote me on that, but I think I've actually heard about it in a book called The Hidden Life of Trees. Absolutely beautiful book.
Probably would. It's been there, definitely.
Yeah. Well, the book kind of talks about how trees communicate through roots and stuff, and I'm pretty sure I've heard about that tree in the air. Don't quote me on that one, but if you have a chance to read that book or listen to that book, I can actually share it with you.
Stunning. I probably shared it from your Kindle that you had.
Possibly, but I think I have it as an audiobook, but yeah, it's amazing. Like, wow.
I love this like section. Pando have relatively short lifespan, usually ranging from 100 to 150 years for a stem.
Very short.
But also, stem is 150 years old. Mycelium is 80,000. Like, I call it mycelium, but it's not really mycelium. It's just like, it looks like a mycelium. 80,000 years old. Shit!
Yep. Very short-lived, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. What was that, Sasha?
That was
She's like doing exercises to prepare herself to start talking. Like
no, I was trying to signal to you to actually move your lips a little bit more because we had a lot of wine and we.
I don't think that I mumble, but I will hear it.
I'm not saying you're mumbling. I'm saying
enunciate.
Yes, pretty much yes.
Enunciate. Okay. Yes, I think I'll just stop it here. I'm being attacked.
It's actually really cool how you can have a forest that is actually pretty much a single plant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing. Where is that again?
America, Utah.
Utah, oh yeah. Nice. The next plant on my list is related to the dancing plant that I've spoken about before, which is...
We used to have a lot of fun with it when we were in Singapore.
Yeah, Mimosa pudica. commonly known as mimosa or a chai plant. Do you know why it's called chai plant?
Because when you touch it, it just shrivels away.
But also pudica means shy, apparently. Funny enough, the reason I know about that plant is when Mom and I were still living in Russia, Mom actually had it as a houseplant.
That's weird.
I remember it being a houseplant. And I remember touching the plant and it was close. And then when we moved to Singapore, where it grows pretty much anywhere.
As a weed?
Yeah. Like, I would be walking my dog and he would be walking all over the field and, like, all this mimosa starts closing. And I was like, yeah, it's so cool. So, again, it has that same motor in it, but it's slightly different to the previous plant where the previous plant finds the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where mimosa closes up if you actually touch it or if it senses danger, pretty much. So that is a reaction to predators in mimosa. But then at the same time, it does take a lot of energy for it to close, which means that if it closes, it will only open once it gets that energy back. And it's very difficult for it to get the energy back because
the surface area is smaller.
It doesn't photosynthesize that much. So it kind of has the similar trigger hairs like the Venus flytrap does.
Mm-hmm.
But mimosa is not a carnivorous plant. So similar traits, but used for a different reason, pretty much. Yeah. And as I said, the movement of the folding of the leaves is energetically costly for the plant and also interferes with the process of photosynthesis. Plants that move, eh?
Alrighty. So, how many plants do you have on your list left?
Well, now two, because one of the plants you've already covered.
Have been hijacked.
Can you give me the cork, please? I think I actually had this wine before because I have a very similar cork saved. Sorry. Because it's got a phrase on it. It says, old wine and an old friend are the good provisions. It's like a quote. And I actually have a cork with a quote in it as well, but it's like a different quote. Yeah. Sorry.
Old wine and a good old friend and a good wine. That is us.
Yep.
You're so old, Tash. Even though technically I'm old.
Not technically, but actually.
All right. Then I will cover a pitcher plant / carnivorous plants.
I did not cover that one because I knew that you would.
Did you cover any carnivorous plants?
No, actually, no.
Then I'll just gather it all in one.
Yeah, like plant. Venus flytrap,
Draceras,
yeah,
and the pitcher plant.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are carnivorous plants that are living in the soil that is very poor in nutrients. So they are getting all their nutrients from eating the insects, essentially. That's why it's not...
The reason Sasha probably kind of stumbled a bit because I made a face. I was just thinking about the bog that I've spoken to you about before, where there was a lot of sphagnum moss, mm-hmm. and then the Drosera, the sundew plant was growing mm-hmm. through it. And I was just wondering whether moss... Because mosses are quite acidic, so they...
It is quite acidic area as well, so they do prefer acidic.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, you are right. It doesn't have a lot of nutrients in it. Yeah. I was just thinking about its natural habitat. That's what I'm saying.
These plants essentially take most of the nutrients from insects because they are living in a nutrient poor area.
I just like how you're looking at your Venus flytrap. Yeah.
She inspires me. But also, just like mimosa, it moves.
Mm-hmm.
And it is...
Because it's got a trigger movement as well, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Yeah.
It has the whiskers inside the mouth, let's call it that, for the Venus flytrap. And as you mentioned, for the mimosa, it is quite limited energy-wise. So I think it has like around 2 to 3 movements before it actually dies back and just shrivels.
Mm.
And yeah, that's the Venus flytrap. Pitcher plant, on the other hand, is...
So pitcher plant obviously does not have the movement Mm-mm. in it. So how does it trap the flies? Is it quite sticky inside, do you think?
And it's not sticky. It's very slippery.
Oh, so the fly can't...
It's slippery.
So they can't just climb out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
The pitcher plant is actually a modification of a leaf itself. So it just becomes a pot with digestive juice in the bottom of it.
So pretty much a stomach with an open hole like a mouth in a human.
Yeah.
Okay.
open whole stomach, yes. Similar for Draseras. So Drasera is also moving.
They wrap the fly, they wrap don't around. They? Yeah. Yeah.
So the juice that is on the ends of Drasera is actually sticky juice, but also it is the enzyme that digests them.
Ugh. It's like the enzyme that we have in the stomach, but it's outside of the plant. Yuck.
So yeah. Welcome to the world of the carnivorous plants.
It's fascinating, actually. It's really cool how you can get a carnivorous plant as your house plant.
They're quite tricky, to be honest, just because you need to keep them moist at all times. What I've done, keep it in the cover pot and keep the cover pot itself continuously
moist,
watered. Not moist. You need to have like at least, 3 centimeters of water on it at all times, so it just gets to the plant and it just continuously gets wet. It doesn't want to be dry at all.
Well, I understand why. Like, I'm not sure what is the natural habitat of the Venus flytrap, but like, yeah, the Draseras, they grow in the bog. They grow in wet, constant wet soil. So I understand why they prefer wet soils now. Yeah. Yeah. The next plant that I have on my list, you actually might know it, and you might have seen it in my garden before. The previous garden, not the current garden, okay. But the one we used to rent.
Right now, your garden is a little bit bare.
There is a grapevine, and there is akeake as well. A hedge of akeake. Anyway, the plant that I want to talk about, and I found it, it's not really like super fascinating, but a lot of people, like, I did not know about it before I actually had it.
To think of. Like, I'm trying to remember what you had in your previous garden and what is going to be fascinating.
It's another lily. It's a lily. Okay, it's a lily type of plant. It's a...
Not interested, but...
Gloriosa lily?
No idea.
So, Gloriosa superba is a species of a flowering plant. It's not from a lilium family, obviously, because it's a Gloriosa.
Aurum?
It's a Gloriosa superba. From a family of the common names include flame lily, climbing lily, creeping lily, gloriosa lily, tiger claw, agnishiha, and fire lily. So I don't know if you remember, but in the corner where I used to have like a veggie garden in our previous flat, there was a trellis on the wall that separates us from the neighbors. And I used to have a red climbing flower that looked like a lily, but it kind of looks like a lily that sort of inverts its...
That was like a Chinese lantern or something.
No, it's a Gloriosa lily.
Okay,
it's not a butylon, no. So the reason I thought to include it in this particular list of plants is Gloriosa lily has leaves, and then on the end of the leaves, there is a little hook, and it uses those little hooks on the end of the leaf to actually climb up. Because usually, like, you know, with grapes and other climber plants, you have either the roots, they're sort of...
Yeah, the suckers are separate.
Yeah. Or you have, like, on the grapevine, you have the little whisker, whatever you call it, that actually wraps around things to hold the plant in place. But in this particular case, it's the leaf that has a little hook on the end. And those hooks are really strong, like, because obviously it dies down in winter.
You need to take it down and...
It rips up a lot of things, yeah, just because it's hooked to it. Yeah, even though it doesn't come from a lily family, it is called the lily, and just like most of other lilies, it is super freaking poisonous. And apparently it has been used to kill other people, but also... There have been instances where someone mistaken, because it's a tuberous plant, it comes from a tuber, someone has mistaken it for a yam or a sweet potato, eaten it, and it did not go well. I thought it's quite cool how it uses its leaves with little hooks in it to actually climb up.
I have a last plant for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the scientific name will be the... Let's see if you can actually do anything with your book.
Yep.
That sounds like a challenge. Vox terrarius fragilis.
I can do the fragilis. I can't do the first name because first name is usually quite unique. Okay, so what is the plant?
Screaming banshee.
Banshee.
Screaming Banshee.
Screaming Banshee, okay.
It is commonly known as Screaming Banshee tree. It is fascinating, vining species found within the depth of Amazonian rainforest. Screaming Banshee fruit looks like the perforated apple.
Okay. Sorry, what was the scientific name again?
Voxterarius fragilis.
Fragilis. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yep. I'm assuming fragile because fragilis, but we'll double check that.
Yeah. While the holes produce, like the holes within the apple, it's like, let's call it an apple.
Mm-hmm.
The fruit itself produces the eerie and high pitched sound resembling the distant screams.
When the wind hits it? Okay. Fragilis obviously means brittle.
During the flowering season, the delicate black and wispy flowers adorn the tree, emitting the subtle and sweet fragrance, which is surprising considering how gory it is.
And it's always the case, though. They'll, like, lure you with, you know, the nice smell, and they're like, yeah.
Flies attracted to this scent unwillingly assist in pollinating the plant as they're drawn to the captivating flowers.
Oh, great. So flies are attracted to the nasty smells and to nice smells as well.
They just come to everything. The ripe fruits release the tempting aroma that attracts birds and flies that are native to American rainforests. It is edible, actually, and tastes like rhubarb and cloves.
That's not a bad flavor profile, if you think about it. Yeah. Mm.
The screaming banshee tree is a rare wonder, and it's unique in its own grown patterns. And the eerie sounds echoing through the wind make it captivating enigma of the Amazon rainforest.
There are a lot of things that are weird in Amazon rainforest, aren't there?
Yeah, especially considering that it's completely made up plant.
What? It's not a real plant.
No, it is not.
Aww.
Would be cool though, eh?
You son of a bitch. See, I now have like trust issues because you did that.
Well, you know, I think it was just a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, but I already had it all topic. Like in my head that it looks like apples with perforated whatever.
Holy apple.
I will finish this off with an actual plant that actually exists.
Let's do that then.
It's called Inceta ventricosum.
Spell.
Which is also known as Inceta Ethiopian banana or a pseudo banana. So it comes from the same family as Musa, which is a banana. However, it does not produce the fruit like banana does. And as we've mentioned, was it in a previous episode that we've talked about bananas being seedless?
Mm-hmm.
Where they actually used to have seeds, but then they stopped having seeds. Where with this false banana, they do produce seeds without the fruit around them, but the seeds are not edible. Why I've decided to include it on my list is the plant grows up to 6 meters. Actually, same with bananas. But did you know that both bananas and seti and everything that is in Musa family is actually an herb?
Yeah.
As you say. A herb. Yes. Pseudo bananas and bananas are actually herbs. Which, can you imagine a herb that grows to fucking 6 meters tall? But with this particular false banana, it is propagated. And actually, it does produce a lot of food source for Ethiopian people especially. It is grown not for the fruit, like banana is, but for the root. So people actually use the root to eat it. Yeah. And just like bananas, the plant is actually dependent on people to keep propagating. But it is a massive fucking herb. That wraps up the plants that defy the typical plant norms. And that is a wrap on 2 tipsy plants. Thank you for getting tipsy, or should I say drunk? With
at
us?
This point is going to be drunk. And okay, my name is Sasha.
We did record 2 episodes in a row today, so yeah. Thank you for getting tipsy with us today and joining in on our plant loving shenanigans. We hope we've inspired you to grab a glass of wine or 2 or 3 or however many.
Or
and give your leafy friends some extra love. If you would like to help our podcast, feel free to follow so you don't miss out on the next wild and tipsy adventure. But also, we would appreciate it if you share it with your other friends and other plant enthusiasts.
Also, be free to ask us questions on our Instagram or any other...
Just Instagram.
Just Instagram, please.
And don't forget to spread the word. Keep it green.
And keep it tipsy.
Yay!